Hello there, I'm Áine Lawler. This is Your Politics, the weekly politics podcast from the RTE team here at Leinster House. And I'm joined by my colleagues, Joe McGrailig, Juliet Gash and Fiacra O'Kioni. Before we get going on the politics, Fiacra, maybe Micheál Martin didn't have a great weekend, but you certainly did. Congratulations on your marathon run.
Thanks very much. Yeah, I mean, I guess most people who are maybe covering or following or taking part in the presidential election might have felt it smart in themselves, but glad to have done it. Glad it's over. Wish the weather was a little bit better.
It took him a day or two to recover, but he's finally back in full capacity now. Again.
Finally awake again now, but also looking forward to the weekend having off and maybe not doing a marathon this time.
Well, you looked better after your marathon run than some of those leaders in St. Patrick's Hall who were a bit fed up with the result last Saturday. And of course, then we had Mary Lou and all the combination of the United Left all together. And we were even saying, weren't we, on the Week in Politics on Juliet Sunday, just that image of the United Left, and they came in the 40s, the two main government parties only coming in the 30s. They had worked together behind the Connolly coalition. It was a remarkable scene.
It was. And speaking of people looking well after an election, Mary Lou MacDonald looked very well, very relaxed, very happy. Politicians often come into a programme like that ready for, I suppose, a hard question and answer session, ready to answer questions, and they might be a bit sort of, okay, here we go, it's about to happen. But she was really glowing, and I think we scoffed when it was said that it was going to be a game changer that Sinn Féin joined the campaign at that late stage. And it was. We have to eat our words, and it really was. And the coming together of the campaign was something else.
I thought it was fairly remarkable, though, when she was talking to you, Áine, and you asked her about the Galway West by-election.
Yes.
She was able to answer without any hesitation that Sinn Féin will be putting forward a candidate, and as far as the United Left approach is going to take place, she'd be delighted to take the second preferences, and they'll maybe do something along those lines.
Welcome, but she wasn't talking a unity candidate, and there have been some Twitter exchanges about this, haven't there? The desire of those in the Connolly campaign, at least, Fiacra, to see the coalition that won for Connolly win in future.
Yeah, I mean, there's certainly a perspective that, look, you know, you can come together for a presidential election, but when it comes to the, you know, down and dirty by-elections and general elections, it's a completely different story. Now, Sinn Féin will be running a candidate. Labour are strongly considering running candidates. Social Democrats are considering their own options. You can imagine other parties will be looking to do it as well. So I'm sure every party will be looking for their second preferences, and every party will be saying, well, we're the one that should be going forward. So is it going to be unity candidates, or is it maybe going to be disunity? I would suggest maybe disunity at the moment.
And just while we're on Galway West, in terms of the other names, Independent Ireland have made it clear, haven't they? They will be running their candidate again in the by-election.
Yeah, so that's Noel Thomas. Now, Noel Thomas left Fianna Fáil, or he might feel that Fianna Fáil left him, perhaps a couple of years ago, over a dispute over an iPass centre, and a couple of incidents happened there. And some of his comments afterwards, one of his comments after that was basically that the inn is full, is how he phrased it in Ireland. He's since found a home in Independent Ireland, and Independent Ireland's TD Michael Collins has confirmed that Noel Thomas will be Independent Ireland's candidate in that by-election. He's the first person who's formally going to be the candidate there. It's going to be very interesting to see how he gets on, because there is a vote there. He did pretty well but lost out in last year's general election, but whether he can jump over whichever gaggle of other candidates and whichever left-leaning independents might be a question.
It'll be a challenge for him. I mean, he missed out. He came in sixth last time, I think, behind Noel Grealish, but this, obviously, a by-election is a very different animal with each of the parties, all of them having Sinn Féin, who topped the poll, Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, would be all very confident that they will have a strong vote that they'll be able to marshal in and push their own candidates over.
And the names being speculated on there, would be Senator Sean Kyne for Fine Gael.
Fine Gael, yeah. Éamon O'Caoimh hasn't ruled himself out, but he hasn't ruled himself in either. But there's no clarity yet on what Fianna Fáil will do. In fact, I have heard a suggestion that they might even put two candidates in the field to try and gathering the vote from the two ends of the constituency, you know, the far west end, which is Clifton and the various towns in Connemara, and then Galway City going out as far as Overmore. That would be a very unusual strategy for a by-election, because you normally would have, normally a conventional wisdom would be you put one person in, but of course times are changing. Yeah. Sean Coyne then, of course, for Fine Gael Senator at the moment, former TD, and he would, he's the likely candidate. Not sure who Sinn Féin will put into the field yet either. And then the question of the United Left candidate, if there was to be a United Left. One name that's been suggested that might be, she might be a sort of, to continue in the vein of Catherine Connolly, is Eileen Shoiga, who is a former Social Democrats councillor. She left the Social Democrats, I think, when Owen Hayes came back. And so she has been very close to Catherine Connolly. Indeed, she was with Catherine Connolly campaigning down Chop Street.
No relation to Grainne.
No relation at all to Grainne, who I can't imagine we'll be running for Fianna Fáil again. One thing about it, though, Áine, it's interesting to note that government sources are saying it isn't going to be soon. Mm-hmm. They've got 6 months to hold this election in since that judgment was given in the case Pearse Doherty took, and they were going to use most of that 6 months, which will mean the clock starts ticking on the 11th of November once Catherine Connolly is inaugurated. And that'll bring it. It'll bring it right out to the beginning of May. In fact, if they want, so that's plenty of time to forget about the little thing, that vote that happened, that anti-government feeling that has grown up, the spoil the vote, all of the things that the election has thrown up for us. It'll give it plenty of time for that to be in the rear view mirror.
And before we come into, you know, the fallout in Fianna Fáil as well, just in terms of that spoiled vote, there was some interesting data, wasn't there, from the pollster Kevin Cunningham this week, and about those who did spoil their vote. And his data suggests largely people on the right, largely young men.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And so he polled, they have a panel of people who they would poll. They polled them on election day.
Yeah.
Exactly. And it's a text to web. So, you know, you click yes, I will answer the question. It comes up as a web form. And in this instance, they gave them options of why they spoiled their votes. And most of them essentially felt that there wasn't a candidate who aligned to their own values. There were only, well, there were three on the ballot paper, but there were only two, I suppose, official candidates at the end of the day. And people felt that they didn't have someone there who reflected their views. This can also be seen as a bit of an anti-government vote as well. Mm. But like you say, young men in particular, though there were some, there were also middle class men and women, young men in both working class and middle class. And then there were still spoilers going up the, I suppose, the socioeconomic groups, but also ages, interestingly. Now, there were fewer, of course, people spoiling their votes in the sort of 50 to 65 category, but there still were people spoiling. And they had a very representative sample in terms of getting over 2,000 people answering the poll, and it was around 13% of people who spoiled the votes. So it was only the spoilers who answered that question, and so they had about the 13%. And the Electoral Commission will also do its own research. They have polled 1,500 people on three separate occasions. The first just before the official campaign, or in the first week of it, one in the middle, and then one the day of the count day. And they'll have 1,200 people who have answered all three. So they really go into the nitty-gritty of this. It's not a fast turnaround. We'll get it by the end of the year. But they're also looking about their appraisal of the campaign, of the information that came out, of their trust in the process. And one thing that will be very interesting to see is, will the amount of spoiling reflect a lack of trust or just a lack of satisfaction?
Choice.
And choice.
Yeah, because clearly people had different reasons for spoiling the vote.
Yeah.
First of all, they actively went out to spoil the vote. So they weren't staying away.
Exactly.
They weren't
a
section of
people.
The electorate who are not bothered to vote. They are engaged people. But then if you looked at the spoiled votes, you know, some of them had Maria Steen on them. Other had issues about housing scrawled across them.
Immigration,
and failure in government
City
policy.
West.
Others
had
City West references to immigration. So the message, and this, I guess, would come from the Commission Toghchán, the message is not a monolithic message from that spoiled vote. I think there'd be quite a number of different reasons proffered.
But it's interesting, isn't it, Fiacre, that the message Simon Harris, or certainly the issue he's been talking about, that's gotten a lot of attention in the week since that presidential election, has been the issue of immigration. Mm-hmm. And he said that there are too many people coming here. He didn't point out that the applications from asylum seekers are down 40%, and the number of deportations is up. And he didn't say what he intends to change about the immigration system that we have that would bring the numbers down further.
Well, this is exactly it. So Simon Harris was speaking to journalists as he went into the weekly cabinet meeting on Wednesday morning, and he did what really is the traditional post poor election pivot from a political party. So he pivoted into this a little bit. He did point out the problems that he perceives and that some voters may perceive in the current asylum seeker process. So he said it's not working, that there's too many people applying for asylum, and that government needs to seriously consider potential changes to its policy. But you're right, he didn't actually put forward any proposals on how that might change. And he was asked about this, saying, OK, well, what changes should happen? And despite bringing it up and despite answering it in detail, and he answered it for several minutes, he said, well, he doesn't want to make up government policy on the hop, which seemed to be something that he was doing. I think, though, this can really be kind of explained and needs to be seen in the frame of the fact that Fine Gael, again, had a poor election. They are pivoting a little bit maybe into, well, where can they have a core vote for the moment? And separately, it's interesting to see the reactions of some of the opposition parties, in particular Sinn Féin. Sinn Féin and Fine Gael, in an unusual way, seem to be broadly aligned on this. They're both saying there are problems, but not necessarily saying how to fix them.
And it was interesting in terms of the Red Sea polling at the weekend, which showed again the climate support for Sinn Féin up to 23%, Fianna Fáil falling to 17%. We'll talk about that in a moment. But also the point being made by Richard Colwell, I think, in his analysis of it, that if you remember back to, you know, the heady times in the last Dáil when Sinn Féin was up in the 30s, but then their fall from that high figure came once immigration started to become an issue in Irish politics. And it's going to be, I mean, I asked Mary Lou MacDonald that question directly. I don't know answer to it, but it's going to be interesting if there is a sense amongst some of the political parties that there is a gap on the right, that they have lost support due to the immigration issue. It's going to be interesting watching that play out.
Yes.
And indeed the impact that will have on the United Left.
Yes, I mean, we've been seeing that play out really for the last year and a half. You know, it's been a sort of a, like Simon Harris's comments yesterday, I would see them as a sort of a continuum of the way the thinking has been changing in the main parties, in the bigger parties over the last year and a half. As there has been a recognition that A, the system is overwhelmed, B, there is an awful lot of discontent in places around the country where the IPAS centres have been placed, and C, there is this disenchantment with the system, with the political system and the political parties, which has been expressed through things like Spoil the Vote and through things like, more anger in social media and in public discourse as well on these issues.
But doesn't this speak to another problem that's been obvious this week? Because one of the other political talking points this week was the reaction to an opinion piece that John Collison had in the Irish Times about how the pendulum in Ireland has swung too far in reaction to all the corruption of the 80s and 90s, that we now have over-regulation, that ministers are powerless to actually tackle the big problems. And, you know, we've had Sean O'Farrell say that, you know, question whether the Oireachtas is too shackled and has the will to, you know, break through the Gordian knot and all of these things. You've had Simon Harris praising again that article, Taoiseach Micheál Martin also talking about it. And you're kind of going, well, you're there. You have the power. You have a Dáil majority. You can walk in there of a Tuesday and you can pass a law of a Wednesday and you can change things. That's they talk about delivery, but you look and you wonder about willpower.
I mean, you had Fianna Fáil backbenchers saying that they were unhappy with the delivery of houses as well, and you're kind of like, fix it then. You know, obviously backbenchers don't have the same level of power as ministers, but they are in power. They're in government.
Yeah, there's actually interesting. I know we're going to talk about it in a couple of minutes' time about the Taoiseach's interview today, where he was saying that, you know, rather than worrying about, you know, the leadership of Fianna Fáil or anything else, what people want is for them to be getting on with fixing housing, fixing infrastructure and all the rest of it. But the John Collison article, which was a very long and very well-researched article, it really was a very impressive piece of writing, basically saying that, you know, all of these agencies have been set up by government to deal with everything in the country. Each agency is independent. Each agency has its own agenda.
And they may be counterproductive.
And they can be counterproductive, yes. So you can have one on the one side dealing with planning, another on the other side dealing with infrastructure, another dealing with environment protection. And, you know, they're contradicting each other, and it's creating, every time it's creating further delays. And then he's, of course, also pointing out about the whole issue of not dealing with the judicial review process. And when you actually read the list of all of the projects that have been delayed, and he has them all there, from the Shannon Water Scheme to the Metro North, and you put them all together in one article, and you're suddenly going, wow, there is an awful lot of things that have been just stopped
on
up the in the
system. On
the
other hand, didn't we spend an awful lot of the general election campaign talking about this? Haven't the government been in power for the guts of a year now? And haven't they been saying there's a housing plan coming? We're going to do something about the judicial reviews. We are going to do something about the judicial reviews. It's a problem. They've been walking around telling us it's a problem. We're waiting on the big infrastructure plan, aren't we? We've been waiting on that one for a while yet. I think they were coming in the summer, weren't they, Joe? And then they were coming in the autumn. We're into winter now.
Yeah. Well, the housing one is the biggest one. And the housing plan was talked about last July, and then it was delayed. Then it was delayed till after the general election. Then it's been delayed again. We're told now it'll be a couple of weeks' time. Who knows? What we've got in the interim is a bunch of individual announcements from the housing department about various different initiatives, like, for instance, planning in backyards, that sort of thing. But we haven't got the overall strategy. And when we do, I'm not quite sure, you know, what immediately it's going to change, because we still know that all these other stops and all these other problems are in the system.
Michael McDougall's been writing about this for weeks too, like the Victorians did. In fact, for months, pass legislation, make it a law, and then there's less chance of the courts being able to delay or interfere with the process. So we'll keep an eye on all of that when the Dáil resumes. But let's talk about Micheál Martin's Halloween horror.
Yes, let's.
He was out on Clare Burn on Thursday morning, in quite defensive form, I thought, Fiachra. I mean, yes, Billy Kelleher would probably have been a better candidate than James Gavin, but he should have told the Taoiseach first, sooner.
I think in Micheál Martin's mind, and I hope Micheál Martin doesn't take offence to that, he would probably feel that he was being as contrite as he could be. And I think that's maybe part of the problem. He's being as contrite as he could be and saying, look, maybe Billy Kelleher would have been the better option. Maybe I made a mistake there. Maybe councillors could have a role in the presidential nominations in the future. But he's not a top-down leader, is something that he said, which I think quite a few of his colleagues might disagree with. And he said he's not
Louis XIV
character, which he clearly has riled Micheál Martin. You could see it in his facial expression.
He described it as hurtful there, he said.
Yeah, he said it was hurtful. And he said he's nothing of the sort, that he finds this he disagrees totally with that characterisation of him. I think, though, that's a problem for Micheál Martin, that he might see himself in one respect, but there's a growing number of TDs, certainly, and also senators within Fianna Fáil, who feel it is a top-down leadership thing, that they're told what to do. They were told, in effect, to back up Jim Gavin, and that's where these rumours of a no-confidence motion and these ongoing rumours about whether...
12 signatures. So you need 12 signatures for a motion of no-confidence at the Fianna Fáil Parliamentary Party. There isn't going to be, conveniently enough, a parliamentary party next week, because the Taoiseach will be...
There won't be one.
So Micheál Martin will be travelling to Brazil for COP, but there will be a PP meeting. There was some miscommunication.
Can you shaft the Taoiseach in his absence?
This is sort of the traditional advice that you give a party leader who's maybe under a bit of pressure. Don't leave the country. Like, there's been so many examples of that in different countries and in Ireland in the past. Mm. And Micheál Martin's not just leaving the country; he's leaving the continent. So you'd wonder what might happen next week. There is a suggestion among some of those perhaps chatty rebels on the back benches in Fianna Fáil that they may not do anything exactly until the Fianna Fáil presidential review ends in, what is it, November 11th or 12th or so. But you can be pretty sure that next week there's going to be plenty of side room chats and chats in the shadows. Yeah.
The review, what's happening with that review, Joe? What do we know about
it? Well, I mean, we know it was set up in the aftermath of the Jim Gavin's departure amidst an awful lot of recrimination. We know now that every TD and member of the Parliamentary Party has been invited to make a submission. And to indicate indeed if they want to maybe give an oral submission as well and to outline the reasons why they might want to do that. It's all leading to a report which will be apparently complete for the 12th of November. Mm-hmm. And then it's at that point one might expect mm-hmm. opposition to crystallise or maybe an alternative leader to put their head above the parapet or say something. But so far we haven't got any of that. And without that, obviously, there isn't, there might be malcontents and there might be people who are rumbling and grumbling. And you do have to remember that, you know, back at the time when the vote was taken on Billy Kelleher and Jim Gavin, there were 29 votes for Billy Kelleher and they were voting in the teeth of very heavy pressure coming from the party leadership, from the Taoiseach, from the Minister for Expenditure. It was a secret ballot.
And the other issue, it's all very well to talk. And, you know, we have heard a lot of people on the airwaves and around the place and giving us their opinion about what's wrong in Fianna Fáil from the parliamentary party. On the other hand, somebody has to be prepared to wield the knife. And there isn't exactly a sense of urgency coming from this would-be revolt.
Who on earth could it be? I mean, I'm sure nobody, no name kind of comes to mind. There has, of course, always been, in the past few months, there's been rumours around Justice Minister Jim O'Callaghan. Now, Justice Minister Jim O'Callaghan, he's publicly said, you know, he has no interest in right now.
He does want to be leader, but just
he does want to be leader, but, you know, he said a couple of weeks ago after the budget, myself and a couple of colleagues asked him, are you happy with Micheál Martin's leadership? And he said, yeah, I'm very happy with it right now. And so I'm sure he probably is because his stock is probably rising due to Micheál Martin's leadership at the moment. I think, though, there's probably two schools of thought in it. One, you're absolutely right, and I would tend to agree in it, that you could talk all you want about wanting to replace him, but until the person or people who could replace him are willing to go forward, it's not going to happen. The second option might be you still put down a no confidence motion. If you lose it, but only lose it closely, does that damage Micheál Martin enough to then maybe accelerate the process? Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's the wisest approach, but there are some in Fianna Fáil who feel perhaps they should do that. Others feel they can shove all they want, but until whoever that white knight for them in their perspective comes forward, it's not going to happen.
It's just, again, watching from the outside, Juliet, you wonder about all this angst over what's going on within the party when, you know, people are looking at the government going, what's happening in terms of the big problems? Yeah. Again, sometimes when you've been in power for so long, your focus shifts elsewhere. And I'm wondering maybe whether we didn't see a bit of that from the two main parties in this campaign, their ability to not read the national mood in the way that the combined left and Catherine Connolly were able to do.
And we've seen, again, sort of a pattern with, you know, through leaders' questions, you know, different opposition parties bringing up almost the same question. And it's not coordinated necessarily each week where they're really tapping into the ennui among the public, among the voters of like, life is not good for me at the moment and it's their fault. They've been in power for 15 years in the case of Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil, supporting, etc. And they're not looking at that. Maybe they're a bit too sort of navel-gazing rather than really dealing with the problems and that's not good either. However, as we all know and are happy to say, there isn't really a big election until 2029. So, you know, will they fix that?
And you can't discount the whole notion of lending your vote in a presidential election. You know, there's a lot of, you know, talk of the presidential election or local election.
Low stakes.
Being a lower stakes and, you know, a second tier kind of election. Because it was only November, you know, last November when Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael got a very, very strong mandate once again to go back into government. So,
a lot of that was on the basis of housing figures that turned out
absolutely
not to be the case. The big question about whether that 300,000, which was the big sell from Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael together during the campaign, 300,000 homes over 5 years. Mm-hmm. Stephen Collins, whose column was quite interesting about this recently, he was saying unless Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael can get their plans together, can get them launched and come up with an answer, then even this far out from the next general election, he was saying they were doomed. And he would normally, you know,
have a fairly good read on it. Yeah. And this is actually something that is coming back from a lot of Fianna Fáil members. And you could see both Micheál Martin in his public comments on Thursday on RT Radio, and also Simon Harris to an extent on Wednesday when he's going into Cabinet. But touching on this, actually, two things that keep on coming up, particularly from Fianna Fáil backbenchers, is saying, look, tell us some specific plan on housing and on infrastructure. Those two things specifically, because unless there's a specific plan, unless they have the notice saying, here's what we're going to do, they can't really sell that to voters who are already understandably frustrated by what is going on on a day-to-day basis for them. But at the moment, many backbench TDs are saying, well, we're not actually quite sure of the plan ourselves. So how do we sell it? And then maybe how do we save our own bacon?
Well, we'll see whether all of that materialises on the Doyle's return. One other interesting thing to take away from the presidential campaign, Joe, on Gaeilge, agus Leofacht an Gaeilge via Catherine Connolly, agus an Chéad Rud's Arinishi, mar Uachtaráin elect, Uachtaráin
Tofa,
Uachtaráin Tofa, ná go chuisi go bail ferishta agus féile an Arachtas don Samhain a bhí an agus giving her support to the Irish language. And I suspect a lot of politicians are going to be trying to brush up the cúpla focal, given what seemed to be the response, particularly from younger voters who seem to warm to.
Yeah, there is something, I'm not sure, is it the kneecap generation, but you can't discount the fact that there's an Irish language rapping band that is extremely popular among young people in Ireland now. But also Catherine Connolly, I mean, you know, she uses the language, she sort of interwove it into her English debates very seamlessly and in a very charming kind of a way, you know, and it raised it in people's consciousness. And of course, then the fact that the other candidates didn't speak Irish with any great distinction or fluency, it highlighted it further, you know. And then the discussion about, you know, do you want the President of Ireland, the first citizen of Ireland, to be able to speak the Irish language? Well, of course, everybody does. It is the first official language and all of that. Ní dóilim go raibh Catherine Connolly sa rang. She's a great example of somebody who, you know, she's from a city on the edge of the Gaeltacht where there would have been a lot of language, Irish language spoken, but she didn't speak it, but she set herself the task of learning it and she speaks Irish.
She speaks beautiful Irish.
It did remind me, though, of, I think it was the 2007 general election in one of the debates, Enda Kenny, towards the end of it, finished his part of the debate, spoke as Gaeilge for a couple of minutes, and Bertie Ahern, who perhaps his Irish wasn't as great, he just kind of leaned in and said, "Agus Misha Freshen." And that was it. So maybe in hindsight, Heather Humphreys missed a trick on that one.
Actually, do you know what, Juliet? I want to finish up on this. And it was, I think, my favourite moment of the campaign when Catherine Connolly was in St. Patrick's Hall giving her victory speech. And Heather Humphreys had so graciously acknowledged Catherine Connolly as her president. And the warm embrace the two women shared with each other. And Catherine then talking about the fact that they had promised each other on the campaign trail that they would share a gin August elderflower.
And I like that. I don't know, is there a translation for gin? And I'm not sure what it is for elderflower.
I'm not sure. But, now, gin, I think, is gin.
Gin is gin. Yeah. And I thought that was a lovely moment. And in fairness to them, they were always very warm to one another when they were, you know, shaking hands. It just felt, you know, I'm allowed to say this, maybe these two aren't. It just felt that women sometimes are a bit more decent to one another in competition. And there was something about that where they were always very gracious to one another. And in defeat, I think Heather's grace was really obvious.
And a point worth making, I think, about the presidential campaign, especially as we face into the Dáil returning next week. And no doubt there'll be lots of rows and voices raised across the floor of the parliament. But the American talk show host Jimmy Kimmel was in Ireland last week. And he was in his opening monologue on his show when he went back, he was going, "Oh my gosh, they had a presidential election and the two candidates congratulated each other.
And we're like,
I know,
let's have a gin.
It's the end of the world. And saying, yes, gin agus elderflower. So more gin agus elderflower to make the world go round. We'll talk to you again next week when the Dáil is back. Follow and review and stay tuned for the next episode. Talk to you then. Bye-bye.